do you know you saw the witch?
I think I was tripping on some, like, weird mushrooms.
I think she was the weight of a duck.
Exactly.
There we go.
And then...
It's a fair cop.
Yep. As is The Witch. Although, I will say, this 2015 horror film is going to bring a lot of people who go in there expecting, you know, a very American horror film. They're going to go, what the fuck was that?
Yep.
So you're telling me that this wasn't the prequel to Hocus Pocus?
I am.
Because Candy Cat.
Now, Sarah Jessica Parker made a cameo. I'm definitely sure of that.
Actually, in a way, this is a very, very traditional contemporary American horror story. Because 90% of American ghost stories begin with somebody moving into a new house.
That's so true.
And this does begin with somebody moving into a new house. It just happens that they're a Puritan family in the 1630s who've been kicked out of the plantation for being Puritan in the wrong way and go, let's start out in the middle of nowhere, even further from the middle of nowhere than a plantation in 1630s New England is.
Yeah.
It's
like Massachusetts. I'm going to guess Massachusetts.
No, it's not Massachusetts. I'm trying to remember where it is.
They say Connecticut.
Maryland.
I don't know exactly where it is.
Pennsylvania.
It's not...
It just says New England wilderness.
It's cold and gray and miserable.
Supposed to be meant... I'm trying to remember because I did actually talk to the director and I think he said it's supposed to be New Hampshire, because there's a couple of very specific tiny things that are built into it that are actually minute references. He went, yeah, no, because I had to do it like that because I did one plot point. It would only have worked in this one particular colony.
So
we will get onto the historical accuracy because I love that.
My question is, when does the part come when the teenagers show up to party and the witch starts killing them one by
Where
one?
There's a sex scene and then someone dies.
Yeah, I didn't.
That was so kind. The first one to die was kind of a blonde.
There were no black people to kill first. I don't understand.
It was youngest and most vulnerable. Yeah.
But we are the Unusual Suspects. I'm Chris.
JC.
Herman.
Richard.
Kat.
Sarah.
And yeah, this is a movie that has been, like, for horror aficionados, has been one of the most talked about films of last year from the festivals. But I've already talked to some people who are just like, this is just not my sort of thing. And I can get either aspect. I was so tired when I saw this after day 8 or something of Fantastic Fest.
Yeah.
And I was like, still really got into it. But there, I was like, God, I wish I had like 3 cups of coffee before this started, because it is a slow burn of a film.
Yeah, it's an interesting movie because I feel like it's going to elicit really only one of two reactions. Well, part of it, one is going to be universal in that it's going to be not what you're expecting. And you're either going to be pleasantly surprised or you're going to fucking hate it. And it's one of those interesting movies that's really going to be one of those two reactions.
Well, yep. Richard, why don't you get into the, tell the basic plot?
Well, this family is kicked out of the colony plantation and moves out to the edge of the forest because, you know, they're pilgrims who've already dared to leave England, and it's a lovely little side point that they're actually from Yorkshire and the rest of them are from down south, which is part of why they're so alienated.
Is that the case? I didn't...
Yeah,
as the other Brit in the room, I didn't notice. I knew they were from Yorkshire, but
there's a lot of little subtext that's built in, that like, which actually helps with the nuance, but you don't need to get...
I would have left a colony full of Southerners, too.
Yeah, it's perfectly sensible.
They're like, damn chavs.
So the family moves to, you know, builds a little farm right on the edge of the forest, but not in the forest, because you want to be near the woods for, you know, well, wood at the end of the day, so you can burn stuff and build your house. But you don't want to be in the forest because it's inherently dangerous.
Yeah.
And one day the daughter is out with the baby playing peekaboo, and suddenly it disappears.
Yeah,
and
like
it
disappears in the space of a half a sec.
Between the peek and the boo.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't know what happens to it. The audience does, and this is one of those moments that it speaks to the level of research that went into this film, because I won't spoil it, because this is one of the first truly gruesome moments of the film, and there are some really gruesome moments, but if you know how witches were supposed to fly and what it took, you'll be going, oh my God, that's what's happening, and you've never really seen that, I think, in a conventional horror movie. And this isn't a conventional horror movie. This is a historical drama which happens to have supernatural elements. It's it's in a parallel New England where witchcraft really worked.
Mm. Yeah.
Where what they believe about the outside and the threat of magic and the devil and how imminent sin is and what it will mean, but also the appeal and the allure of the supernatural this time. That's all there.
So you could shorten this whole movie down to like 5 minutes and it would just be the intro of the last Witch Hunter any given television show episode.
Yeah.
were the supernatural elements real?
Mm.
No,
they are.
That's what the director said.
Yeah, the director. But also, if you look at
I like it better if it wasn't.
But if you look at it narratively, there's stuff that there's nobody, that none of the family is there, so or would know that that was happening. So yeah. For it to not really be what's happening would not really work.
But that's the only scene that the family is not involved in.
Yeah.
Which mm-hmm. I think if that one, like, 1.5 minute sequence was not in there, it could have been they were what happened in the Salem witch trials and all that was they were all tripping, yeah. Probably. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they had
or malevolent, just malicious.
Like contagious cabin fever where they all yeah. went crazy. And it all started yeah. with the baby going.
Well, or they were all already Puritans and therefore yeah, off to a bad start.
Exactly. If you've read The Crucible, you know, the play, it's heavily suggested that it's just mass hypnosis. That was the mass hysteria.
Right. Well, haven't they historically said they also thought it was ergot in the bread that was driving them crazy?
But there's also a lot of what happens in Salem is really about internal politics. Politics and people trying to get people's
lands. Oh,
yeah,
of course, you don't like is, that person or they have something you want. Yeah. I want your goat. And okay, Salem you're a witch.
Salem's just part of a much more extensive history of witch trials, which are actually, talking to the director again, that's where he got the dialogue from. He actually built it out of dialogue, out of testimony in witch trials.
But this is definitely not, I feel like the only tie into that sort of stuff that we think of when we think of Puritans and witches is to create doubt in your head that maybe none of this is really happening. Yeah. Because ultimately, I feel like one of the film's most effective scares is the realization that you fight in your head that this is actually happening.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that this is, as he said, a parallel world where this stuff really did, there really were evil witches who were doing truly horrific shit for their powers. And even down to the very end of the film, which I found to be just chilling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's some of the more chilling moments, like when the family is kind of all together seeing what's happening and they're, without saying the words, I don't know what to do. They're just kind of like, by their actions, literally saying, I don't know what the fuck to do.
Well, they're falling back on their religion again, trying to create an explanation for it.
Yeah.
Because that's all they have.
Yeah, exactly.
You are, these are outcasts from a community of outcasts.
Yeah.
They have literally nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. You know, it's reiterated on several occasions that it's at least a day back to the plantation when anything horrible happens. It's like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, especially when the horse runs off or is killed, then they're so isolated. I mean, there's a scene where the husband said, can I just say also that for me, one of the most effective parts of the movie was the relationship between the husband and wife. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a human drama more than it is a horror film. And I love horror. And I went in not knowing anything about this and expecting a straight horror, you know, typical kind of Blair Witch Project type, something in the woods is going to kill you kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it was much more about the trouble within the family and the kind of the struggling, the fact that the teenage daughter is trying to be a woman, you know, in an era where trying to be a woman is trying to be, you know, an independent, free thinking woman where that is not acceptable at all. And, you know, the struggle between her and her father, between her and her mother, there's some weird dynamics, kind of semi, you know, Oedipal dynamics between her and her mother and father. And there's definitely towards the end where the mother says certain things towards, the mother says to the daughter, you know, I saw you looking at your brother looking at you in that way. And then you were going to do the same thing with your father kind of thing. So there's that weird semi kind of psychosexual dynamic going on. But I really liked the performances were amazing.
And the cinematography for that.
Absolutely.
Matter,
yeah.
Stunning. Although,
and the score.
Another one of those films that you want to bring a jacket with you. because you're going to feel like you're freezing.
I was hiding under my
There's no wear, though, to, like, skin and then wear. No. Like, Leo just, like, comes out of the woods for a second. He's like, these people are fucked up.
Did anyone have trouble, like, I mean, yeah, the old English that was used throughout the film is great, but did anyone have trouble, like, understanding all of it?
Sure.
I would appreciate maybe subtitles.
I definitely, Courtney asked me, he's like, you didn't want to see it again? I was like, oh, I do. I want to see it on Blu-ray with subtitles, because there were parts I missed.
Oh, you colonials and your inability to understand English.
I was going to ask you that, Richard, if you, because I didn't have a problem with it.
No,
at
not
all.
At all.
And I asked her afterwards. I was like, well,
this is one of the beautiful things about it. They got an English cast, which makes perfect sense, because, you know, there wasn't an American accent of any variety at that point, which is perfect.
No, they would have sounded more like how I sound than how they sounded in that movie.
When you sound drunk, maybe, but they are from Yorkshire.
It would have been weird if they all had Boston accents, to be sure.
Yeah.
These guys.
I think there's obviously, if that's historically accurate, what Sarah said about, and I have definitely read that, you know, as a linguist, I've read the old English accent and what Shakespeare sounded like and what his contemporary sounded like was a lot more like standard northeastern American than what we think of as a modern Yorkshire accent, which is what the family
well
are speaking,
right? That's the thing,
but
that
of course to the audience that would sound extremely weird and inaccurate, so obviously they've taken a bit
and also there are, you know, the accents are very localized as well, because in fact, again, that's one of the things I was talking to the director about. He mentioned he was initially thinking of doing it in a contemporary Essex accent, and you've gone, you know, the pronunciation was so complicated, and they actually pronounced the silent K's as a hard K at that point. Whereas the Yorkshire actually hasn't changed dramatically since the mid 13th century.
Well, they still say thine, and I mean, even in modern Yorkshire, they still say thine and that, and the older people still say that. So.
Oh, I get a few Boddingtons in me, and I'm all these thousand. All
right.
Sorry,
I need
British talk.
I need subtitles for you on those days.
Well, I did notice was that the little girl that we got, the younger of the girl twin. She was very young. Obviously, she was about 4 or 5, I think, and she kept slipping into this really southern, like upper class English accent. I was like, "That's your RADA training." Kind of thing, you know? She kept slipping out of her Yorkshire into that, and I noticed that a couple of times actually.
The most difficult to understand for me was the older boy. Was that what kind of?
Well, that's still it's just Yorkshire. Okay. It's just a different thing, and he had a higher pitched voice, so harder to understand. And Sarah and I were talking, but we were like, that the father, the actor, he definitely has a Game of Thrones face, and he was in Game of Thrones, just like every other
character. And so was the wife.
I can't remember.
Well.
I think he was on the wall. I think.
Let's see, Dagmar Cleftjaw. That helps at all. He is also Amicus Caro in the last 3 Harry Potter films.
Oh, all right.
Chris Finch in the BBC version of The Office.
Oh my god, that's where he's from. Oh my god. Finchy. yes, brilliant. Okay.
Change of pace.
I don't know. I mean, I came out thinking I was going to be much more scared than I was, because I love horror, but I tend to be that person that's, like, hiding behind my jacket for most of it. I like it, but
you like
also,
to be scared, but you're
I do,
also
but
in
I'm also
the moment,
legitimately like, scared. So. Yeah. And I did have to say, I did go home to my apartment. I was on my own, and then the light started flickering, and I was like, that maybe wasn't scary. And I'm lying there in bed going, yes, it was scary. Ah. But I don't know. I didn't think it had very many traditional scares in it, actually.
I didn't think it was... I felt like that was part of why it's kind of standing out, is that it avoids those all
jump scares
almost completely.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely the very definition of atmospheric
creeping
horror.
Dread was it was dread. So heavy. It felt like the pressure. I mean, I was so sucked into it, and I was just like leaning forward watching for however long it was, but I felt tired afterwards because it was so intense.
Yeah.
Which it's only 90 minutes.
Oh yeah.
Normally when something's this good at what it does, I'm like, keep going. But it's so perfectly structured. You don't feel the 3 acts in there at all, though they are in there. And the final descent into madness is so perfectly pitched that it doesn't feel like, well, here comes everything falling apart. It's just like, it's just this beautiful, slow-paced unraveling of everything. And let's be honest, the goat is great.
Yeah, we haven't even mentioned the goat.
Accidental creation
where
of
Where does he
of
train? Because he's just pitch perfect.
Is his accent accurate? I just want to say that.
Okay, good.
Yeah. That.
There was that when we saw at Fantastic Fest, there were two horror films that year that had a creepy black goat.
Oh, yeah.
And then everyone at the final party was like, why didn't you? It doesn't, but it was.
Oh, no, you did. Oh, I was going to give credit to the creepy rabbit in the film.
Oh,
the creepy rabbit was creepy.
Creepy hair is fantastic. Heavy breathing, creepy hairs have never been more frightening.
He had his little twitchy nose, and when I first saw him, I was like, aw, but then I was like, no.
Demon buddy.
There wasn't the, for speaking of cameos, where was the Chaos Reigns fox in this? It should have popped up at some point.
That would have been great.
I think that would have been a little too on the nose.
A little too on the nose.
I'm going to go for that.
Did anyone else have, I just wanted to ask, did anyone else have trouble kind of working out kind of what was going on, or I don't know, just I felt like it was light on plot, actually. I mean, I know it's more about atmosphere, but I came out thinking, oh, okay. I felt the ending was kind of contrived a little bit. I mean, it was beautiful, but then I was like, oh, okay, it's that easy, huh? Kind of thing. Because I was like, she's like, all right. Shrugs off. I mean, am I allowed to talk about the ending?
Well, let's not go so far.
Kind of leave it bigger.
I think what we can say is that I didn't feel like the ending was earned, especially what they were setting up throughout the film.
Absolutely,
it's like, okay, you're playing the games like, is this really happening or is it not? Is this just, you know, these people are going crazy? And the decision they finally make, it's just like, okay, but it's kind of, to me, it didn't work.
I think that's the thing. It only doesn't work if you have that degree of ambiguity. And considering some of the earlier scenes, I never had that ambiguity. I'm like, something has happened to this family for a reason.
Yeah.
And the payoff is the final revelation of the reason and who has been doing all this.
Yeah.
And for me, that was. Absolutely.
And is it implied that all these things have been happening, and again I'm trying to be ambiguous here on purpose, is it implied that all those things have been happening with the aim of
of that final moment
and it had to be done in that way? It couldn't just be like, hey, do you fancy different
you have to break, you know, it's breaking somebody of their faith.
Well, because it's not
dragging them down to the point where they will do this thing.
These aren't the witches from Charmed.
The witches from Charmed are so sassy,
but they're not. These witches are actually
perfect
evil.
Hair all the time.
These are the worship Satan type of witches, not the just piss everyone else off on the set of 90210.
Yeah, Dr. Bombay isn't turning up to solve Tabitha's babysitting problems.
I do feel like the ending though is earned in the sense of, like, right, she's literally asking out loud, are these things happening? Are they real? And she's about to give up and accept that maybe they're not happening, and then boom, they're real. And it's like,
I also like that, like, the what's actually happens at the very end and that character's motivation to do what she does ties into what you were talking about earlier, that whole subtext of what was going on and gender roles.
Oh, yeah, no, so explicit. I mean,
it's very much about, like, all building to that point, but all that stuff is kind of just a tiny bit under the surface of the rest of the
film. Where she takes off her dress and is just, and that, and like that really heavy dress, like, falls off her. Yeah. I felt that was a great moment.
Yeah. And it's one of those moments, if you're sometimes like me, I kind of pay too much attention to specific shots in the trailer. Like, sometimes I play this game when I watch movies, I'm like, what shot haven't I seen yet? And then I think about the shots that I haven't seen yet. If you haven't seen the trailer, don't see the trailer.
They'll pick the scariest moments and make you think it's going to be constant, like, adrenaline shock. And it's more like a really slow build.
Yeah. It's not that kind of film at all. Well, let's go to final thoughts. Kat, why don't you keep going into your final thoughts and your arbitrary rating?
My arbitrary rating. Okay. Oh, no. I don't know what to say about a rating. Well, I definitely went in. I went in not knowing anything except that it was a horror. And I was completely absorbed for the entire runtime. The Draft House has this popcorn thing, and I looked at it, I was like, I definitely can't eat that. But I was like eating without thinking, and I like ate the entire thing, and I was just like, you know, I was so absorbed, I just kept eating. Anyway.
You do that so you can empty it out, so when it gets scary, you can put it up over
your head. I had my jacket over my head. It's fine. And it really does have some... It's one of those movies, like, it's been likened to... When I had a quick look around at critiques of it, it's been likened to The Babadook, which stuck with me for ages. Oh, my God. It's definitely, if you like things that will... It's one of those things that you have to kind of revisit in your mind and work out why it was so scary and why it stuck with you. It's definitely not...
a jump in your seat type movie, but it's definitely one that when you're home alone, you're going to be thinking about it a lot. And that's what I was doing last night. I would rate it. I would rate it 9 feisty black goats out of 10.
Herman.
I mean, I really enjoyed the film. The performances are amazing, even though sometimes I couldn't understand some of the dialogue. I'm an American.
Colonials.
I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah.
That's all right. Dude.
Freedom. We're all about that. I still feel that the ending wasn't earned. I like the ambiguity and what they finally chose. It didn't particularly work for me. I want to see the movie again to try to find that subtext. But for now, I think I'd have to give it 8 out of 10 nipple-eating crows.
Oh, God, why'd you have to remind me of that? Jesus.
Richard?
I just have to say this. That poor actress has had weird things on her tit.
You're so right. Oh, yeah.
This is absolutely the kind of thing that I'm looking for from contemporary horror. Slow burn, cerebral, prepared to shock when it needs to, and when it is required by the action and the drama. Astounding performances, a beautifully structured script, and just the sheer dedication to creating a period piece that isn't just set dressing, but is in the warp and the weft of everything that happens, down to a mention of butter as the best thing on the planet. Not chocolate, not rubies, not jewels. If you lived on the frontier at this point and you didn't have your own cow, nothing would be greater than butter. It's so delicately put together. And the score, which is just an astounding feat of choral orchestration, truly adds to the sense of impending and constant dread. I give this 9 out of 10 guilty verdicts at the Pendlewitch trials.
Sarah.
Look it up.
I agree with you, Richard. Like, the slow burn aspect of it, that's the kind of stuff I love in horror, too, where it's disturbing enough that it's not like, oh my god, I'm gonna vomit, but it's like, oh, that is pretty fucked up. In small doses. I think I would have liked it to take a step back from the supernatural aspects of it and make it a little more ambiguous. That one scene we're talking about that was pretty early on in the film that basically said, no, this is actually happening. I wish that had happened later so that we could have questioned it for the majority of the film. And then, like, at the end, you're like, oh, it is happening. And I thought some of the, like, especially the last, or the second to last scene, was a little heavy-handed with the, like, with the goat.
Yeah.
People
laughed at that point, actually. Some people did laugh.
Some people were giggling. It was a little too, the devil. The robot devil.
It was kind of a comedic, it was a comedic death, I think, unfortunately. Yeah, slightly.
Yeah, so, and another thing is, like, for me, the like, religious horror doesn't really do anything for me, because I never believed in this shit, and, like, I've never really experienced someone, like, I've never had people close to me who are, like, really, really into believing in God, and that prayer will cure a dying son of choking on an apple. So it's not, like, something that I think about for a long time. But as an art piece, this was very, very beautiful. And like Herman said, well acted. I'm going to give it 8 out of 10 babies.
JC?
Squish, 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 squish.
No. Squishy, juicy, succulent baby.
Delicious. Baby, you guys are so horrible.
Oh, I just got my new baby juicer.
You guys are so sad.
So this is my second time seeing it, and so being more prepared, because the first time I was kind of like a lot of people in that I was expecting something different. I was expecting more straightforward horror. And so this second time I was able to be in the movie a lot more without thinking so the entire time how surprised I am that this is different. And a breath of fresh air into the horror genre is always welcome. And when you're able to do something different and excel at it, that's an A+ in my book. The performances are all great. The score, whenever I do pay attention to the score, I realize how great the score is. Like, to me, it must be great, because it's not one of those things I notice right away all the time. And from like the religious aspect, it's interesting to think of, like, when you look at modern day demonic possession movies and like stuff, like The Exorcist and things like that. Like, today, we don't think of the idea of witchcraft as a thing that's existing. And so, like, to think of how that idea may have evolved originally from, like, what people thought back then as witchcraft. Like, to me, thinking of this movie as, like the first demonic possession story is interesting. That may just be me examining it too far, but I found that really interesting. I loved it. I loved how different it is from anything that you'll see in horror this year or even the last couple of years. I would give it 9 out of 10 creepy hairs.
You know, I wish, it's driving me crazy. I've been sitting here trying to remember, because I just read this recently and I cannot remember who was saying it, some director, but they were talking specifically about working in horror, and they were saying horror has the one advantage of all other genres in that you can try really insane new stuff. You can do stuff with horror that you can't do with any other genre, and people will still pile in to see it if it's a good movie. And I think The Witch is a good example of that. I couldn't imagine any other genre with this same type of setting and sparseness of dialogue and, you know, like, and actually working, you know, telling what that story is. Yeah, it's a romantic comedy set in a small Puritan vacuum.
I'd go see
that.
And what was her name? Catherine.
Yeah, Catherine. And Jebediah and Catherine.
And then there's a teenage Thomasine. Yeah. Thomasine. I thought they were saying, like, Tomlin. I was like, Thomasine.
But, I mean, just recently we've been seeing plenty of examples of that, where horror gets to try and gets to do stuff and gets more attention because of its ability to be able to fuse with, like new ideas and filmmaking from multiple different points of view. The Witch is definitely one that, if you consider yourself a horror aficionado, it really has to be on your list for films that to see right now, because it's one of the ones that everybody is talking about. Whether or not it's going to fall on your "this is one of the great horror films" list or not, it's neither here nor there. You'll still come out of it going, okay, I'm really glad I saw that. And it's going to inform the conversation about new horror, as did The Babadook, for, I'm sure, at least the next several years. I personally really enjoyed this. It's definitely going to bear a rewatch for me. I give it 99 out of 100 men who will almost certainly be killed or enslaved only for breeding purposes when the witches win. It seems like inevitable if this is that reality. Men can't win.
Don't worry, we don't need you anymore.